This podcast is brought to you by Refix, a natural and organic isotonic drink containing 78 sea minerals. It's available on Amazon UK now, and it's heading to the shelves of all major health food retailers and pharmacies soon. Oh, that is nice.
It is nice. It's really good, though, because when I was talking to the guys at Refix, it kind of marries very well with our brand, because not only is it replacing like your normal kind of sugary isotonic drinks with something that's all natural after training, but also for like things like hangovers.
Important
like,
for our clients.
Yeah, super important for our clients.
Because a lot of them are hungover when they come into the gym.
And training.
The flavors are good. That one we've just had now, what is it?
That one's orange and they've got lemon. And then they're bringing out Extreme Hydration, which is mixed with coconut water as well as seawater, because they get the minerals that would normally be added in to a...
Floating around in the sea.
Exactly, they just pull it out of the sea.
78 of them.
It's filtered very, very well.
And it's the Spanish sea as well. So...
the cleanest.
Special sea. And also they do things to help the planet. They do regular beach cleans, they help tidy up our oceans. It's just a great drink and great people, so we're happy to be partnering with them for this podcast.
Our lovely listeners can buy Refix with a little discount, can't they, George?
They can. It is BTL15, and you type that into the discount code on the Refix website and you get 15% off.
That is BTL15.
Refix, seawater, sea hydration. Extra slurps. Is that how you drink all the time?
Super slurpy.
Hey, I'm Dave Hasty.
I'm George Ashwell.
I'm Josh Betteridge.
And I'm Georgia Kennebun. And we are Before the Lights.
We work with actors and teams behind the scenes in film, TV and sport to keep their mental and physical health ticking over on and off screen.
On this podcast, we talk to some of them about how they get the most out of their mind and body and everything in between.
Welcome, today's guest. And I don't even know if I pronounce your second name properly. I'm going to just... I bet you get this all the time, don't you?
I am actually not sure if I pronounce it correctly, so...
I'm going to do what I think it is.
Yeah, go on.
Okay. Ian de Castica.
That's pretty spot on.
There you go.
Oh, come on.
Impressive.
Is it Dutch?
It's... it's Flemish.
Flemish.
But it's Belgian.
Belgian. Flemish, Belgian. Yeah.
And how
Flemish.
Did they end up in Scotland?
Who knows? I didn't check any of my DNA. I'm too scared to find out what's in there.
So a lot of the listeners will know you as Leo Fritz in Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
I did explain in great detail exactly what I meant using the Queen's bloody English.
I use normal English. Words like duck and run and might blow us to pieces.
Oh, wow. Wow, congratulations, Agent Ward. You managed to string three words together in a sentence.
Also, the character Bones in Ryan Gosling's film Lost River. And more recently, which is more relevant to us, was Arthur in Winter King.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Are you guys going to put lots of, like, extra cheering?
Yeah. You guys do that yourselves. And, like, girls
screaming.
I would
maybe add in, like, a few, like, I love that guy.
Yeah.
And every time I say something, get a laugh track on the end of it would be really nice.
Jimmy can do that for sure.
More important than I am.
Looking forward to hearing that. Welcome. Today's guest, Ian de Castica.
Yeah!
Look at that guy, he's so cool.
It was actually Winter King, that was the reason you came into the gym, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Most recently.
That.
I think you had, I don't remember. We obviously knew each other.
We've known each other for ages, yeah. I mean, I think that was probably, specifically I came in for that, did some intense sort of...
Yeah, you had to look like a king that could wield a big sword.
So. Do you want to give some... more context for people that might not know of or seen it.
Yeah, so Winter King is, it's sort of a new kind of take on the Arthurian legend, and we subvert some of the tropes. So things like Excalibur and Guinevere, they're all in there, all those exciting pieces, but they're in sort of a new, I think we've really tried to root it in reality and stuff.
So it's like a slightly nuanced version of like the fantasy of King Arthur.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's a new breed of warrior, I think, and which is why something we were going for was... he was meant to, I think, have a more of an agile style to him. I think the typical warriors from that time were probably these big, brutish, muscly guys with big beards, and there is a character like that in it. And Arthur is a sort of, you know, the way Otto, one of the directors who set up the show, described him as, was sort of kind of like one of the SAS guys of their time. They just move and walk in a different way. You know, they're not sort of
agile,
sort of
sinewy, have been living off not a lot of food, but they're so strong still, kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Because I constantly, I'll usually have a pretty typical, I have a tire around the middle here. and so that was just getting rid of that was one of the first ports of call.
Absolutely. And it's all relative on screen as well. It's like people often think that you have to like put on loads of muscle to
to play this certain character. But actually, looking lean and looking strong doesn't come with massive size often, because on camera, no one, it's all relative. So
yeah,
if you actually, sometimes if you lean out, you actually look bigger and stronger.
Exactly. And I also just think, like, there's no way I'm going to look, you know.
We didn't have enough time.
We didn't have the time.
No.
So you sort of play to your strengths in that aspect. And there was exactly that. There are these other characters in it that are these big, what you would call your more typical champion warrior of the time, which is big guys that are sort of gruff big guys. And it was sort of trying to set Arthur apart from that and sort of show that this is, he's interested in a newer way of doing things, I think. You know,
more skilled fighter.
Yeah, and I think he defines that sort of in something new, something fresh.
You're saying, like, it's different to the typical kind of physicality of those roles. How was that when you actually got going on set? Because I guess there must have been a lot of stunt training, and there's a lot of like swords and horses and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
is that a lot of like?
I mean,
a big
that
prep
stuff
part?
Is so much fun. I mean, like, that is the stuff where if I could tell my 9-year-old self that I was going to be doing something with swords and
Unreal.
Horses and it all really, really, you know. It all really, really just helps piece the character together. Just holding the weight of a sword and having it sort of in its sheath and its belt. You sort of learn how to move, and being on a horse sort of gives you this, there's a stoicism about horses that just kind of bleeds into you when you're on top of one. There's a sort of mutual sort of...
There is literally like a way you have to sit on it anyway, which is quite upright and proud, isn't it? Because if you do it, you never see anyone sort of slumped over a horse just like... trundling along.
Fucking great horses. We could just talk about horses the rest of the podcast if you want.
We do another podcast about horses.
Yeah,
okay.
We've spoken quite a lot about
that one. What's that one called?
It's called
Quick
the Horse Show.
Straight to the point.
I was like, before the horse, that doesn't work.
we spoke about horses quite a lot on this show. Actors and horses, it's like a thing. A CV having like, oh, able to ride a horse is like a big thing on an acting CV.
What do you put on yours?
I had never ridden a horse before.
Never?
No. The thing is, we had, you know, just some of the best horses, you know, these horses, they call them actors' horses as well because they're so well-trained and they're sort of...
used to shit people being on them.
Exactly.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to describe it. But I went down to a place nearby me, and this place was a little bit more rugged, and I got put on this guy called, I think he was called Chunky or Cheesy, one of the two.
Chunky or Cheesy.
He was quite small, and I thought I was kind of getting good with him, but he would just veer off track. There was this 10-year-old girl who was actually my trainer. She was training me. She was
in charge.
Yeah, she was in charge of me. That's how.
You said it was a rugged place. Are you sure you went to the right place?
You and Chunky Cheese are just trotting around.
It turned out, I asked her, I said, "What? Why is he? Am I doing something wrong? What's the?" And she was like, "No, he's got a taste for other horses' shit." and he would eat his own shit.
He was just like veering off to eat.
Yeah, so I was constantly just on the back of this horse called Chunky. Well, he went around eating shite.
Now, since doing the show, what's your level of horse riding?
I think when I was filming, it was so cold. I sort of had this mantra running around my head of, one day I'm going to be on the beach sipping a margarita. So when I finished, I just went straight out to Mexico. There were these horses on the beach, and I asked this guy if I could ride one of them, and he let me. And I'd never, so when you're on set, they never let you gallop.
You gallop.
Yeah, me specifically. Yeah. I'm not allowed to run. But so I went to Mexico, and so I'd never galloped before. So I could tell when I got on this horse, he was sort of wanted to go. So I just gave a clip and had a proper gallop along the beach.
Were you a bit scared?
No, it was great.
Yeah.
It's actually, weird enough, galloping is easier than cantering, yeah. It's just,
I guess the rhythm of it's probably easier to kind of maintain.
You don't really have to do much. Yeah.
That sounds great.
All the other ones are slowing the horse down, technically.
Yes.
All the other ones are like, right, don't go too fast, whereas that's just like, just have a
exactly.
run.
Exactly, and you need to be much, with cantering is sort of about, you do need to be much more in rhythm. Otherwise, you will bust things up. Have you ridden a horse?
A similar story to you there, I suppose. The horse I rode. So I was out in Australia and my wife Emily came over, and she rode horses as a kid. And she had this kind of quite like majestic horse called Dundee. And he was like...
Dundee?
Yeah, great name for a horse, isn't it?
Brilliant name.
I had a horse called Marshmallow, who was... when I was sat on Marshmallow, I think I may have talked about this on the podcast before... I felt like I was like on a police horse, like that kind of size. And there's a picture of me standing next to him.
Than the horse.
I'm crouching. so that I get my head next to his head.
So were your feet like sliding along the floor?
Yeah,
when you were
it didn't feel like that though. I felt so far off the ground, and then he was about as wide as he was tall. Obviously, why he's called Marshmallow. And so Emily's like galloping off on Dundee, and then the lady who was kind of leading us around on this little horse trek thing, she's like, "You can try like trotting." Marshmallow's just walking, and he got like probably up to a canter. And then there's this moment where it felt like he and I both just went, nah. And he just slowed back down to a walk and be like, yeah, that'll do.
And then he ate some shit.
Then he ate some shit. That's sad. But that's nice. I think that's my only experience.
That's a cool story.
Yeah, it was good. I enjoyed it. I don't know if Marshmallow enjoyed it, but yeah. It's tricky though. Like, horses on sets, we've definitely had people who've like got chucked off them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Especially with like when we worked with all the Game of Thrones, there's a lot of horse riding in that, obviously, and those people getting thrown off horses left, right, and centre.
No one got chucked off horse in ours, and there was times where you'd sort of had these, you know, stunt riders would come in, and sometimes they would be put on horses that were not actors' horses. I remember one of his horses just bucking this guy like mad, and he managed to stay on. It was like watching a real, you know, then you see those ones.
Like cowboy style, like
tame, you know, the wild.
Well, you
horse.
Know, you those games where it's like the bull. And oh the yeah, stays on. It was like that, but in the
oh,
wild.
Oh really?
Yeah.
And you're all just standing around when it was happening.
I didn't do anything to help. I just stood there.
That meant like just how if you were close, you want to be like I'd be getting out of the way of it. We'll move on from horses.
Yeah, I mean, we did a lot of horse chat.
We did a lot of horses.
You want to save some for your other podcast as well?
We can talk a bit about Marvel, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. One of the things we always try and talk about is like the kind of work and pressure and how that affects people's lives. Was that something like when you began that job with it being such a big name, I guess, with Marvel being so well known, was there something as you got going with that? Was that kind of like a...
Yeah, definitely sort of, you know, I learned about the whole studio machine, I think.
Yeah.
And this has its positives and negatives. I loved my time on that, and I made some of my best friends for life. I think the thing that I found really difficult... It's a real luxury when you act. You get to go to different parts of the world and you get to try new things like horse riding and, you know, sword fighting and all that stuff. But with this one, suddenly I was sort of, I just shipped off and we filmed the show in America, in Los Angeles. And whilst that's a cool place, suddenly I was just in this place. I didn't know anyone and I felt like a million miles from home. And I remember sort of feeling really isolated at first. I think, so that was kind of one of the something I really struggled with when I was first out there. And then, yeah, just the size of it. It was, you know, you'd be there and then suddenly, you know, we did the pilot and then we were going to go publicize it and they took you to Comic-Con, which is cool.
It's insane.
I had no idea that suddenly we were on stage in front of like 5,000 people.
We had
a really devoted and lovely fan base, and they were really, you know, that was just the brilliant part about it. And, you know, I'm not someone that really goes on social media and all that stuff. And so that was going to those things was sometimes the moment where you went, oh God, you know, people are really enjoying the show.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
But it's also never been a show that it's like, you get recognized for it, but it's never been crazy for me.
Did you have anything when you first got out there, which was like helpful in terms of like a routine? Because a lot of people talk about coming into the gym and making that part of their life is like the little nugget that's routine they come back to.
I was a really late bloomer in getting to the gym. I think I was like, I was late 20s, and I'd sort of got to the age of 12, and then my body had just stayed that way till so I was like 28-year-old with the body of a 12-year-old, and I wasn't really concerned about it. I was never sort of body conscious. I wasn't really that health conscious. You know, I would sort of, like, I remember there was a time where I would just eat pizza. I'd get to like tea time and I'd be like, what's that for dinner tonight? Pizza?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
And yeah. I mean, I actually do look back at that and wish I had savored it more. Wish I had known how, because at that time, that's the thing. Why you're not health conscious, there's no consequence. Like, I couldn't put on weight if I tried. So I wish I'd appreciated it more. At that time, like now, having a pizza is like
absolute,
you know,
treat.
Oh, you know, yeah. On a Wednesday, meet my girlfriend and be like, should we maybe
no, we can't.
Get a pizza this weekend? And
what a great conversation that is every time it happens.
Oh, we'll like run around the house screaming, like, and then we'll text each other until the weekend. Like, what? Have you thought about what toppings you might have? Like, that's actually a really good idea. Yeah, I might have a piece of yours. Would you want a piece of this one?
Do you go off and go new ones each time, or do you just get the same thing? You end up just getting the same thing.
I try and go for new things, actually.
Ooh, nice.
Tried a little caper anchovy the other day.
Sometimes it can be a bit too salty.
Yeah.
Capers and anchovy, both salty.
The first couple of slices, you're like, I'm into this. And by the end, you feel like you're just dried out.
Sometimes that's the thing with pizza. Sometimes you get a couple of slices in and you think, oh, God, I really...
I love how we started a conversation, really good line about mental health, and we just spoke about pizzas for a solid 5 minutes.
Actually, okay, because let's get back onto mental health. So I would say that the thing that happened with me was got into it when I was in LA, and part of it is because out in LA, it's like, you know, it's this mecca of celebrity. Yeah. And
did you ever feel like once you got there and you started working there and you kind of bedded in, was there then a... like a cultural expectation that it's like you're going to a fitness class or you're going for a run
it's this kind of like, you know, it's this mech of celebrity and sort of stardom and all that stuff. So what you have is this convergence of like every kind of, you know, all-star quarterback and, you know, prom queen and king just all diverge on LA, and they're all chiseled. Like, I mean, they're like the Archangel Gabriel has just chiseled them all up. And I, you know, I'm just this sort of pasty Scottish guy walking about, and you know, it's a bit of a bubble there, and you start to go, God, no, actually I never really was that body conscious, but you start to be like, oh, maybe I should be doing something. And then my sister, so I've got a twin sister, and we have quite we're just very similar. We also have very similar kind of mental health things, our anxieties and stuff. They all, you know, we're very aligned in it. And she said, she came out one time and she's like, Ian, I found this really great thing. It's called exercise. She was like, I found this really cool thing and it's called F45.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, HIIT classes. And I was like, oh, I'm not sure. And she took me along to one and I nearly vomited halfway through.
Instantly.
And
hated
I insisted,
yeah,
I was never going to go back, but she made me go back. And then I got quite into doing that. And the cool thing about that was just a routine of, there's a set time every morning, you go 45 minutes, you're done, that's it for the day.
And it's all kind of mapped out there, you do what's on the screen in front of you.
Exactly.
And
yeah,
move on to the next station, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so that was the thing that really got me into doing it. And then once you start doing stuff like that and then eating healthier and all that stuff, you do see the difference. You know, I did notice the difference quite quickly just in my well-being. And there was, I think, a point. The only thing is sometimes it can go too far one way. You do get quite addicted to it quite quickly, don't you?
Yeah,
you have to sort of find the balance. But yeah, and then since then I've just been pretty good with going to the gym, but I was a really late starter to it.
It's often the way though, the people that have the metabolism and aren't like super kind of vain, I suppose the word is, that then what's the point? I don't need to, there's no like drive for me to go to the gym. So it's often those people that start late. Like if you had a really slow metabolism, even if you were only mildly vain, you're like, fuck, I gotta sort this out, I gotta make sure I stay on top of it. But there's no need for you to go to the gym.
Yeah, totally. And I also actually think that people's, you know, consciousness about health and being healthy and healthy eating and going to the gym and healthy lifestyle, I think even just in the last 10 years, it's changed massively.
100%. It's now cool to be healthy. You're cool now.
I'm cool now. Finally. And then can you get the clapping over that?
I love that guy.
We've touched on the big Marvel franchise.
Yes.
I do a little bit of research before coming into these ones, just so you know, like, we know where roughly.
They've typed your name into Wikipedia. And
roughly where we're headed through the conversation. Something I didn't know about you is you've been involved in another world famous, let's call it franchise, Coronation Street.
Wow. It's not really a period that I can remember too well.
You must have been really young. Like, how old are you then?
Yeah, I was like 10, 12.
Mad. Like, I always find that like mind-blowing when, because a few of the people we've had on have started out working
young, yeah,
so
yeah,
young, and then kind of like you've obviously carried on going. And it's, most people will never have that where it's like you start doing something at like 10. And we spoke about it with Chase Utley in terms of baseball and sport, where he started out as a kid and it became his job. It's like, it's not normal for that to happen. And to go into a world where like you're on set of Coronation Street, which for maybe people in America that might not know about, it's a big deal in the UK, isn't it? It's like,
yeah,
tons of people are watching it and it's quite a big production. That must be quite a daunting feeling to go in as like a 10-year-old. I guess you're saying you don't remember it too well, but like to be involved in work for so long is quite an amazing thing, I always think.
Yeah, oh no, definitely. I'm really, you know, you know, I started out getting into acting because me and my brother would stay up late watching, you know, Goodfellas and stuff like that. You know, give us awful nightmares. But we got really into comedies, and I remember we loved Father Ted, and we would buy the script, the books of the scripts, and we would play the characters, and we would, you know, my first everything I got, I bought a video camera for me and him, and we made short films. So we just lived and breathed it. It was just obsessed.
And this is at the age of like 10 or 12?
I was like 8, yeah.
Wow.
And so then I went to a little drama school nearby, and a child's agent came in and picked up, and then got a part in Coronation Street and stuff. And I think you have to be a little bit mad to get into acting, you know, because so much of it is based on luck and all these different things. And I think when I was younger, I think that's probably where that, you know, I've always had a thing in the back of my head of, you know, being quite assured that I wanted to do it. And I think part of that is probably because I monetized it in some little way when I was younger. And I thought, oh, this is possible.
Yeah, yeah, there's a route here.
But I do remember that. The thing I remember about that is I remember that overnight walking out the street with my friends and people just coming up to me in the street, and I was finding it really, I found it quite scary. Yeah.
Well, I guess like those kind of soap operas are the thing that, because they're on daily, aren't they? And there's like millions of people
biggest
must watch
viewings,
it.
I'm sure, of anything on TV, right?
You probably have like way more hassle from that than you would do from after Comic-Con or anything like that.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And we said you haven't changed since you were 12 anyway, so.
Exactly, still look the exact same.
It's just a bit of a beard now.
True, yeah. Just with a beard, just a 12-year-old kid with a beard.
It must be cool, like you were saying that you bought the camera and your brother are making films, and you did kind of touch on it at the start, but now you are literally kind of like living out that little boy's dream of being a king and sword fighting and all that kind of stuff. It's so like full circle moment, I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and also I think, you know, I think that the character of Arthur in The Winter King was never something I thought would come my way. Just never, you know, I was just never sort of archetypally I thought in that bracket for being cast like that. And I think I was very lucky that Otto, the director, was trying to do something different with it, and sort of saw something in me that would be good for that character. But I just savoured every second of that, because I just thought I don't know if I'll ever have this chance again. I never thought I would. And so it's such a fun thing to do, and it's a certain type of character that I've never played before. So it's felt like a whole new frontier to me.
Yeah.
I feel like the first session you came in, there was definitely that kind of, you were downplaying. Yeah, you were downplaying it to yourself in a way, I think. Because you were like, well, yeah, playing this, da, da, da. He's like a bit of a king, he's like a king, and he's back. And I'm like, you play King Arthur. That's fucking cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
And you're like, it's pretty cool. And then it kind of developed from there.
But you find like when you were training in the gym, and like you were saying before, you'd done a bit of F45, but you'd never really kind of like dived into it head first and like really gone into the gym so consistently. Does that commitment and the kind of the effort you put in, does that help you kind of think about how you're going to then be that person and be that character? Especially when it's someone that's like so commanding and leading of people, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it all sort of bleeds in, doesn't it? There's something about it. It's the same with costumes and makeup. There's these guys, I think going back to that thing mentioned earlier about them being the SAS of their time, these guys, Arthur and his men, they're sort of built for battle. They're just ready. And so they have these kind of shaved, cut haircuts, very short, because, you know, they don't want the hair getting in the way. And they're very streamlined, and makeup put all these big scars all over me and sort of shaved in scars to my head and stuff. And just having those little things and looking in the mirror makes you go, oh God, that's not me. And, you know, that's someone else. And it feel a little bit more like I could pass off as a warrior. And it's the same thing with going to the gym. Yeah, sort of putting in that commitment to it
knowing that you've worked hard to get to a point with the kind of the shape that you're in.
Yeah.
I always say, like, if you got a character, move like the character would move.
Yeah.
And that'll help you feel more like the character, even though you're not wielding a shield, you're not in the field fighting other people. But if you can move like they would move when you actually get there, you're going to be more prepared for it and more comfortable doing it.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Even if it is in a nice, comfortable environment where you give you a protein shake afterwards and it's me going, well done, that's great. Like, it does still give you that.
I love that guy. I love that protein shake at the end.
That's a main everybody
talks about it.
The main reason people
just
come in.
Just to pound back those shakes.
Everybody talks about it. Something that we've talked about a lot is that in-between period when there's like you've done a job and you put so much work into it, and then like you said before, you've gone on holiday, and now when you come back to your everyday life, are there things that you do, and it could be the gym and it could be other stuff, but just as a routine in terms of like health in general?
Yeah, keep pizzas just to Saturday. going to the gym is a massive one for me. And actually, I have to say, when I'm filming, I find, like, you know, when I had days off, I would come in and see George if I was back in London and stuff. But I find that if it's a busy schedule, you're so busy that going to the gym is just the last thing on your mind.
Mm.
And so I often find that sort of when I've got time off, getting the routine of going to the gym like 3 or 4 times a week and going to yoga and stuff.
Kind of sets up the rest of the day, doesn't it?
It really does, yeah.
It gives you a purpose, especially if you're not on that call sheet where you're being told what time to wake up, what time you're getting picked up, what time, what you have to wear that day, what you have to say.
Yeah, you got to suddenly do it for yourself. You've got to do everything ridiculous. For yourself.
Yes.
Stupid, yeah.
No, I think a lot of people find that routine comes from the gym because it's like once you've done that, can do anything else you want because you've dedicated. It ends up being about 2 hours once you've got showered and everything, and it's like you've dedicated 2 hours to yourself for a day.
Yeah,
and you can let yourself off and.
Yeah, and I just think doing all this stuff of like, I'm a lot more. I joke about health earlier, but I'm a lot more conscious about my health now than I ever have been. Doing things like therapy and stuff like that, I never sort of it was something where I was from and sort of. Just it was just not something you would do or talk about doing or whatever. And
yeah, but I grew up in a place where no one has therapy, no one talks about therapy. Yeah. But I think knowing people, in especially in this industry, which is very open and people are very communicative in our industry, it just became very normal. Like half of my friends have therapists, and as a kid growing up, if half of my friends had therapists, I'd be going to a weird school where everyone needs help. but it's not the case. It's like therapy is a very important thing for. Just like the gym, it's just going to the gym for your brain in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
When did you start?
I was filming something, and it was just this thing where it was always kind of from the start of it. It was sort of just ramped up to level 10, and this character is constantly in a state of anxiety and desperation and panic. I never had that before, but it really, really. After I finished filming, I couldn't relax. I couldn't. And leaving the house, going to the shops became really scary for me, things like that. And eventually my girlfriend went, I think you should talk to someone. Mm. I've got a therapist. Do you want to go talk to them? And I was like, oh, I don't know. And I did it. And then once I did it, sort of, I was off the races.
Made sense. Yeah. 100%.
And even if it's just sometimes going and just talking about you've had a really bad week and you don't want to burden anyone else with it, it's sort of just,
that's the thing.
Yeah, I love it.
It's also learning that the therapy doesn't have to be the negative. When I started therapy again, it was like, okay, what bad thing or what bad thought had I had or what thing had affected me in a negative way?
Yeah.
And actually you learn after doing it for a bit. It's like, oh no, talk about the things that have made you happy because that like helps you realize kind of how your life should be balanced.
Totally. And that is funny. Isn't it funny when you get into them, you just realize all these sort of weird patterns of behavior that are sort of thought patterns that you're just like, why am I doing that? Mm. It makes no sense. I remember my girlfriend said to me at one point, said something, angst about something or whatever, and she said, you know, somebody told her this thing about this idea of, you know, if you imagine yourself, you're on the cinema screen at a cinema and you're listening to people's reactions of you, you always put the most negative ones in the front row. She's like, put me in the front row, you know.
100%.
Which I just thought was really cool.
Reading Instagram comments, like, if there was, I'm sure actors,
yeah, really, I wouldn't go like, near that, yeah,
but thousands of Instagram comments, but they will only ever look at the one that's like, oh, he looks a bit fat in this,
yeah,
or like, and it's like, there's so many like, oh, I love that guy, and it's like, weirdos, and you're skipping through it all, when actually it's like, they're the people pushing you up, like, appreciate that.
Which is why I have a laugh track and an applause. I just have it going on in the back of my head. I have a little earpiece.
Yeah,
you've
already spoken about voices in your head.
So when I was talking about therapy there, I had them all go, oh.
I bet that makes every day so much more fun.
Oh, it's great. Because every time you make a joke, it's hilarious, even if no one else finds it funny.
Speaking of people laughing, I'd like to get into our embarrassing stories section.
Dave's favourite bit.
Well, I tripped up twice on the escalator on the way here.
You did. So and then on the stairs on the way in as well. Was
did
that,
I?
That,
that
was me.
Was that you?
Oh,
that was
me. I heard it happen behind me.
Yeah, that
I
was
heard
me.
You but
say
you know
that,
when you trip so. Over and someone's like right by you, and then I did it twice so much that I turned around to that guy and went, what?
Had he noticed? He was like, what?
He didn't give a fuck. Yeah, he didn't care at all. I actually probably drew more attention to it. And then the whole way for the next 10 minutes, you're thinking, if somebody's still looking at me from behind, just pretend like, oh, I'm water off a duck's back.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm not
sure. But suddenly you can't
it.
Walk normally. You're like, how do I walk?
Or like you're looking at your shoe like, ah, oh, stupid shoe. Stupid, why did you do that?
Yeah, or something in the ground. Yeah, yeah. Who put that stair there? Yeah. That, Have you had? You sure you've had the ones where somebody like breaks wind and you're
sneaky little fart.
Yeah, but I just
it's like downward dog. The position of you being directly behind someone when it happens.
But I love it when it's somebody who's clearly their first time at yoga. I remember it was in the other day, and this guy did it, and like no sooner had it left his body that he apologized for it. It was like, sorry.
He knew it was coming.
Yeah, it was like sort of this hysteria.
He's been holding that in for like the whole session, hasn't he?
Yeah, and then everyone, there was sort of like a set off a chain reaction, like four more people after him just went. And anyway.
Do you know what would be even better in that situation is if he apologized first and just went, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
Sorry for what's about to
happen. That's the way to do it.
That's a cool move.
I'm really sorry about this, guys, but.
I think I might do that next
time. Yeah, I think you should.
No, the other one was another yoga story, actually. I was doing hot yoga and, you know, you sometimes have different instructors that come in and sometimes you get the instructors that come in that are kind of like teacher, like they're not instructors, they're sort of like teachers from when you're like strict teachers and they talk to you like you're in school. And this one woman who, you know, at the start of it, she's very much like, good morning, everyone. And, you know what people are like. It's people, you know, no one really says anything. She goes, that wasn't good enough. I'll
no
say
way.
It one more time. Good like morning, everyone.
The register.
Oh, yeah. No.
So that's how it starts, right? And then I just remember later on, and it's like, it's, you know, it's at the point of the class where it's like you're ready for a rest, like things are. And we were up in a certain position. It must have been the crow position, but it was some. But we were standing up doing something. Maybe it was called another bird name. I'm not sure. But we get in this position. And we're holding this position, you know, and this instructor goes, okay, and we're not getting out of this position until somebody caws like a crow.
What?
And
Excuse me?
Yeah. And so I think we all, nobody did.
I used to do this in acting school. I got this, don't worry, guys. I'll save us.
Certainly didn't take this one for the team. nobody did anything, and...
Probably because they were so confused.
Yeah,
about
absolutely.
What did she just say?
Absolutely. And so then we're there, and then that happened, and then nobody says anything, and eventually she goes, okay, then, I guess we're not leaving this position, are we? I look right to my right, and I just see this girl there, and I just see her. I mean, she's wobbling, she's just really struggling, and she's shaking, and she just goes, so sad. And everybody knew, and everybody dropped out their position, and everyone knew what had happened. And not like, and I always feel really ashamed because I never thanked her at the end.
Yeah,
I was like, thank you for doing that. That was
you really took one for the team, but it sounded like she didn't have a choice.
Saddest
she was the
crow.
Hero we needed, but not the one we deserved.
one mad way to teach a yoga class.
Dumb.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if I get a teacher like that, you know, in your classes, I'll just leave.
Just get out.
Starts.
Yeah.
What you should just do a little fart, apologise and walk off.
And then come on like a crow and they're like, everyone's done now, guys. I've let everyone off this class.
Yeah, it's that same with that thing of like, when people would have that thing of like, leave everything on the floor.
Absolutely.
I'm like, no, we'll absolutely not do that because I won't enjoy the rest of my day.
I'm going to be taking the majority of the stuff I came with back home with me.
Yeah, thank you very much, Adrian. I will not be doing that.
It is mad that, because it's like, maybe that makes sense if you're a professional athlete and you've got to like
searching for that.
Achieve a certain thing or whatever, but for 99% of people, mad way to approach training.
So it's insane. Yeah. I think one more thing that we haven't touched on yet, but just because that was kind of brings it all back together, is your connection to other people that we train, which was Joe Dempsey and Daniel Kaluuya back in the day. You did a show called The Fades.
The best. Yeah.
And The Fades was such a great show, and it actually won Best Drama at the BAFTAs.
Yeah.
And got dropped the next season, next year. Didn't get picked
actually,
up,
one of
which
our,
is insane.
One of our cast, Tom Ellis, he was present. We won the... We actually got... I think we got cancelled before we won the award.
Yeah, yeah.
No way.
And then we won, and he had to go out on stage and present the next award.
It's insane.
Through gritted teeth. Yeah, I loved that show. And I specifically loved working with Daniel and Joe. I mean, they'd done quite a lot of things, and I had done a couple of things. I'd done some things when I was younger, but it was my first thing, sort of having left.
And you were the lead in it.
Yeah,
and Daniel played your best friend, and Joe was this.
But they were so kind to me, like, and really sort of Daniel especially, like, and I remember we did a screen test together, me and Daniel, and yeah, just the loveliest. They were just lovely to me. And yeah, it was great. I love doing that. It's still one of my favorite things I've ever done.
Yeah, it was so much. It was, and you can still watch it, I think, somewhere. And it is genuinely great TV. Yeah. Jack Thorne wrote it.
Jack Thorne. It is. Yeah. And Farron Blackburn, who actually directed Winter King, who directed Fades, came in and did the Winter King.
No way.
Really?
There you go.
Yeah, so we got to work together again. Love that. Yeah, years later. Yeah.
That's awesome. What's coming up next? What are you up to at the moment? Like I said, you're in between things at the moment.
Oh yeah, between things in the moment. I mean, there's a potential for we're going back to do season king, season two, season king of winter two.
Season king.
We're going to do season king of winter two, which we're really excited about. No one's ever done.
No one's ever seen winter two.
No one's ever seen a season king before.
How do we train for that? What?
The king season. How do you train for that?
It's winter two.
Winter two. Yeah, is that a winter with a two or is it winter T O O? Yeah, so we might do season two of The Winter King, and then potentially something, going to squeeze in something before that. Because yeah, last year was a bizarre year.
It was a very busy year.
Well, it's just with the strike and everything. Mm. It was a bizarre time, and so now everything's sort of.
Were you involved in the strikes? That your show was already finished filming by the time the strike.
Yeah, we were finished filming, but I wasn't able to publicise stuff at the time because annoyingly. But no, it was great that I'd done. And I was actually out in America, so sort of managed to go down to a couple of the strikes and stuff.
Amazing, great.
Well, we hope in that period of time we'll see you in and out of the gym.
Oh, that's absolutely the other thing I'll be doing. Yeah, just coming into the gym. I've done my knee in, haven't I, George?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to fix that, and then we can get training again.
For me.
It's what all the actors do.
All of them.
They all do their knees in.
At some point.
Is that true?
Guarantee it.
Is that a real actor's thing to do
your
knee in?
Mostly to do with, for some reason, everyone going, I'm gonna be a runner.
I'm going
to
run 10K.
I'm going to run a 5K once, now I'm going to do a 10K.
And then they come in and just go,
I've hurt me.
I did that. Did you do this whole, in lockdown, there was the whole... It was a whole 5K challenge.
That was what started all of the actors hurting their knees. It was its fault. Yeah,
I did it once. Halfway through, nearly stopped. Got to the end, they went, "Nope, actually, No, actually, don't like that. once is enough for me."
That's sensible.
Yeah, and then I did it. They did one of these fun runs in the park. I was up in Glasgow and I was like, couldn't get to the gym. I thought I'll go do a fun run in the park, and immediately finished and went, definitely not doing it again, actually.
Yeah.
What was that?
Why did I
checked out of running now. That's it.
I remember.
You're not going to get lured back in at some point.
Absolutely done with it, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah.
Don't blame you. Well, see you in the gym very soon.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on.
Me.
Big cheers.
Yeah, this giant. Well. Yeah.
Hey, what noise?
Look at that guy. He's so cool.
Oh, my God. He's so handsome.
Yeah. That was...
I didn't even tell you to say that.
Thanks, man. That was great.
Thank you.
Loved it.